Welcome back to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. I am Joe Staub in a button down, and that is grainy, kind of small looking. Did you lose weight? Have you not trained Matt Powell?
Oh, man, that is just hurtful, man. You didn't have to go there. Call me ugly all you want. Call me grainy. Small is just, that's just rude. Just rude.
I know. I don't know. Maybe your head is so much bigger than your body now. I don't know. The proportions don't seem, your shoulders and chest don't seem as big as they used to be.
It's black. It's a black t-shirt. It's slimming, Joe. Ooh. It's slimming. Maybe something you should look more into.
I definitely should, man. Dad bod for life. Three kids now, man. Watch out.
Ooh, congratulations, by the way. Super happy
thanks.
For you,
Bob. Thanks. So speaking of just someone who I've known, and it's funny I say dad bod because me and her used to joke about this all the time. So tonight's guest, Natalie Schneck, someone who I worked with previously at other companies, who's now the VP at Perspective Fitwear. So she's just an awesome person, right? As soon as I started working with her, we hit it off really well. Me and her, our styles aligned. We're very different in a lot of things, but that's like they aligned perfectly because her strengths were my weaknesses and my weaknesses were her strengths. So if you notice, that was all of my weaknesses were all of her strengths, and she had all the strengths and I just was a weakness, and I just tried to not suck when I worked with her because she's that good. So just in case anyone missed, that was always her strengths. No, she's awesome. Love her as a friend. You know, she's become a great friend from, you know, the times we worked together. Can't say enough good things about her. And she's someone who's worked in the trenches in the performance fitness space in the personal training world, evolved into multiple roles, and now she's a VP of, you know, technically a clothing company startup, but it's more a sport clothing, women's specific sport clothing company.
Yeah, for me, it was cool to listen to her because, you know, obviously you're out of the profession, you're kind of moved on, you're doing just business only and doing a very good job at it. For me, it was really cool to hear how somebody took fitness and continued to use it, but in a completely different way where it was much more, assuming things work out, profitable. But she's still able to do things she loves on a day-to-day basis. So it's super cool to hear her story. She's very well-spoken, extremely good guest. And what was your favorite part of the interview? What did you think really stood out to you?
So just knowing Natalie the way I do, one of my favorite parts was being able to like put her feet to the fire in a sense. So Nat is someone who really likes having things planned and structured. And again, like on that content writing, marketing, business side, you know, she's awesome. She has it planned. She has, you know, she knows what to do. So when I said, hey, come on, she was kind of like looking for like notes and like, what are we going to talk about? And what's your question set and everything? I was like, no. We're just going to go with it. So I know like deep down inside, she's going to hold that against me forever. So that was definitely my favorite part, was being able to take her out of her comfort zone and just kind of make her roll with it. Because again, even without a plan, she's just so good. And even given kind of off the cuff answers to letting us flow, she nailed it. So I think that was my favorite part, was taking her structure and her plan and bringing my like laissez-faire improv style to it and just being like, let's go.
Just proving yet again that you're a terrible friend and human being.
Absolutely. Hey, sometimes you just got to walk on fire. It is what it is. All right. So I'm going to say it because I think you said it the last time and we've said it for probably 17 out of the 22 episodes. Without further ado, episode 22, Natalie Schneck. Welcome to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. That is the beautiful Barbells and Bourbon, Matt Powell. I'm the what, Joe Staub, Matt. What's my adjective today?
Man, I don't know. You're looking very bushy with that beard. I think that's what I'm going to roll with.
All right, so I'm the Bushy Joe Staub, and tonight we have a personal friend of mine, someone who I love dearly because she's awesome. We have Natalie Schneck, the Vice President of Marketing for Perspective Fitwear. So I met Natalie about now, it was almost 5 years ago when we were working at a sport nutrition company. She was on the West Coast, I was on the East Coast, and we crossed paths with working one of the corporate partnerships we had. And we just hit it off because we're very similar. We're very different in a lot of ways, but we're very similar in a lot of ways. And the biggest thing, we like to get shit done. So me and Natalie have been friends ever since. And she's someone who I admire because she takes her passion and her intelligence and she hones it in on and successful at whatever she does, right? So when we were in that business space, she was killing it in what she did.
it wasn't a surprise to me when she left that company and now she jumped into a startup and she's doing all these new things. And it's a totally different industry within the health, fitness, wellness kind of space. But it's something totally different. It's apparel, and it's specifically women's apparel. And I'll let her get more into the details of the company. But, right, background is both as a personal trainer in the nutrition space, worked at Lifetime Fitness in a couple different roles, bounced around, you know, from brand ambassador to in the nutrition space, like I mentioned, to a couple different things where she has a great business life experience, if that's what you want to say, you know, kind of cumulative experience in all of those worlds. And really honing in on our audience, right? She wasn't the strength coach in college. She wasn't the dietitian for professional sports teams. We've had those. But again, this is someone who has just as much knowledge, and I would argue, if not more knowledge than some of those people, because I know all of them and I know her. And she's just in a different place doing something different. So welcome. I hope that introduction was good. Natalie Schnack.
Wow. I feel like I should have come with intro music, but thank you. That was a very nice intro, Joe.
No problem. So who are you? What do you do? I gave you the intro, but kind of give us that elevator pitch through how you got to where you're at.
Sure. Yeah. Well, like you said, Joe, I think, since we're, you know, talking business and careers, I mean, I think I'm your quintessential executor. I have from this day I first got my first job to up to present day, I like to get things done. Can I say shit? Can I curse?
You can say whatever you want.
I like to get shit done. And I'm a big learner. So, you know, those two things go hand in hand, you know, learning to get shit done and then actually getting the stuff done. So, you know, what I'm doing right now, I'm the VP of marketing at a startup. It's a women's apparel company, and it's based here in San Diego, where I'm coming to you from. It's very cool. It's an eco-friendly, you know, fabric that's innovative. The whole platform that we operate off of is kind of, you know, encouraging women of kind of a more diverse size range to get involved and express themselves through movement. And just making sure that we are kind of amplifying women's voices and experiences in sport. And so that kind of ties back to everything I ever did with personal training. I did my MS in applied nutrition with a focus in sports nutrition. So when I was doing nutrition coaching, kind of, I feel like my career just leading up to where I am today was just about walking along with my clients in their experience with life and just understanding what they were up against and, you know, what issues they were facing and trying to overcome. And then it kind of naturally accumulated into this really cool platform, this really cool company that we can kind of celebrate all these different experiences through really great clothes, but also a great community of content and things like that. So that's where I am today.
Nice. So one of the other things, obviously, you know me personally, you know, I have kids, I have a daughter. Matt actually has a daughter and his wife recently had a baby. So he's got a son too. Yeah. So we're both dads of, you know, girls right now, soon to be women. So one of the other things I love about you, Nat, and just for anyone out there listening, you know, as a woman in the space, right, as an intelligent, competent woman who can get shit done, you know, I hope that one day when my daughter grows up, she's like you in terms of that stuff. Because no, seriously, and I say that because not only is it a sign of the times, but also it's one of those things where we need more people like you, Nat. So just a little reference.
Are we crying 10 minutes into the podcast?
I'm also sweating because I'm in my attic and I'm like glistening because I'm hot. So it's a combination of both. So don't worry.
Wow. Well, that's the utmost honor. Thank you so much.
No, no worries. All right. So talk business, right? So within a 10-year span, you're going from a personal trainer, kind of like one of the largest global gyms there is, and you're commission-based and you're hustling, right? So you're doing everything the personal trainer has to do and fight against to get clients, keep clients, and prevent people from taking your clients. And now you're the VP of marketing at a startup in California. So from a business standpoint, how did you develop your business acumen? You know, what did you do? Did you read books? Did you have mentors? Did you go to classes? How did you get from A to B?
Yes to all three. Did you read books? Did you have mentors? Did you go to classes? You know, I think the school of, you really can't fake experience. So one of the things, you know, working commission full time, one of the coolest things learning that early on, like in my early 20s, was just learning the basics of, kind of a, like, you know, just a commission based plan. Like, how much do I need to make this month? And what percentage of that am I taking home? And then how does that break down into piece into this type of training or into how many hours of my day? And, you know, if I stack two clients together and they like each other, I get paid X amount more. So working commission-based early on, it's tough in the beginning. I will say if you have the stomach for it, was an incredibly helpful learning tool for me. And that was very much at that time, very sink or swim. So, you know, I look back at a time in my life and there's so much like, oh my gosh, moments, but there's also like, wow, I'm really impressed that at that age, I was like just chasing those numbers, and reaching them. So, working, so I kind of do that platform of business that doesn't really, for me, change. It's more about the scale and the specific KPIs and the metrics, right? What do we need to make to be profitable? Like, what do I need to do? Going back to sports nutrition, when I was more into territory expansion, to be a little more chronological, when I moved into sports nutrition, all of a sudden it wasn't just me with a client, right? That's just direct to consumer. That's me to a person making a relationship. All of a sudden I'm in, given this territory to expand. And it's not a customer anymore. It's a team, right? You're in California and we need X amount of these triathlon teams or running teams to be serviced and educated, and personal training gyms to be educated. So now taking what I learned, okay, I have a month, right? And if I want this amount of, you know, locations to be serviced and educated, I can expect this bump of revenue from that month because people are excited about the product. They know how to use it. They feel confident. They've noticed the difference. And how do I, you know, do my, and I know you and I are both big fans of the start, stop, continues at the end of each month and then replicate the success and increase by a little bit each time. Mm-hmm. And it's really comes down to, and you, again, it really comes down to like not being afraid to break things down into metrics for yourself, because numbers can be extremely comforting and they can they don't have any, they're not subjective, right? I guess you could argue they can be subjective depending on the scale, but truly like what I need to do today in order for this to be successful in a month, in 3 months, in 6 months, you know, having some sort of process oriented way to move forward and to also measure. But that's so important because what can happen and what I've certainly have happened to me is that you spin your wheels, right? All of a sudden, and especially in personal training, especially, you know, you're trying to reach these numbers, you want to train all these people and you look up and you're the back of your store, so to speak, is a mess, right? And so creating these early habits and KPIs and metrics first, and then being flexible and mutable enough to expand and change them as your business changes, whatever you're doing. That's kind of where I think the mindset has to be. Books wise, I can't recommend Atomic Habits enough. It is like, I don't know if you guys heard of that before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're not the first person to recommend it on this podcast.
No way. Really?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, and that's James Clear. That guy's been doing like, I had a downloadable PDF from him, like when I was at Lifetime years and years ago. He's very succinct and kind of talks about the science of, you know, developing habits. The great thing about that type of education is it's applicable to everything. You can apply that methodology of, you know, habits are energy savers, essentially. It's stuff you do without thinking about it. So if I have a business process here that I use to measure my success, great. If my habit is to work out every morning, also great. Atomic Habits, that's like, I wish they taught it in middle school. I would have been way off better off. So books and then mentorship. I think that at every point in your career, you got to seek out and find a mentor. Let them know you want them to be your mentor. You know, let them know that you intend to learn from them. And my mentors have changed based on where, you know, what type of field I'm in this industry. I have one right now. She's outstanding. Been in the marketing world much, much longer than I have. And that's not where my education started. And then classes, interestingly enough for me, like my education, like my undergraduate was a BS in community health and my master's was an MS in applied nutrition. So my classes for business, I do a lot of reading of, I love the Harvard Business Review. I think they've got some great quick touch articles. Measure What Matters is a really good, very technical book. But I think if you're somebody like me who wants to be away, not away, but somebody who wasn't educated on an academic level in business, Measure What Matters is a must read. Mm-hmm. So you can understand if your process is right, if you're measuring what matters. I wish I had come up with that saying. So that was a big, long ramble for you, but that's kind of how I approach things.
No, you absolutely crushed it. We appreciate it. So one of the things you said, and it was way back in the beginning after you went on to say a lot more amazing stuff that we need to unpack, but one of the first things you said was the scalability. And I hope that a lot of the people who are sitting here listening to this, watching this, whatever they're doing, are at that position in their life where they're trying to scale, right? It's not so much the beginners. It's not so much, you know, the people who are way ahead. It's just people in the middle who often get lost because they don't know where to go, how to build, where to go from there. Can you touch on that a little more? Kind of what helped you be successful besides the mentors and the reading and the Harvard Business Journal, obviously?
Yeah, well, yeah, in terms of like jumping to and from, I mean, I cannot, and everybody's journey is different, right? Everybody's story is different. One thing I cannot understate. So I'm married, I've been married for 5 years. When I made that first jump from being a personal trainer to sports nutrition, I did have the financial support for like that 6 months when I was like working part-time and forcing myself in full-time of my husband. So I don't, you know, I try to be very honest about, you know, none of us get through life without help, but that to me was an extremely important transition and having that honest conversation with him of like, this is going to be transitional. And I promise, like, you know, not that he always believes in me, but I'm like, this is my goal. This is where I want to get. But in terms of me, you know, bringing in my share of money, like we were able to do that for 6 months, which was great. So that was a huge part of my success that I always want to make sure that, like, you know, I'm recognizing. You know, the scalability for me, it really just kind of comes from like picking your head up, you know, like get your head above the breakers. It's when you're a trainer. And again, I come from general population. Like I wasn't a collegiate coach, or anything like that. But if you are, for one thing, if you're happy being a personal trainer the rest of your life, that is awesome. And I think it is a great profession. Heck, I might even go back to it one day. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do in 5 or 10 years. One thing I do think is important is not necessarily focusing on this one central endpoint. Like I never at any time when I was a personal trainer was like, oh man, I want to be the VP of marketing of a women's athletic apparel startup. Gotta make it there. The thing that I was really passionate about was one, always increasing my earning potential. And that happened through a few steps. Having soft skills, which I think personal training, if you're, you know, like engaging, gives you great soft skills. Having the hard skills and education to kind of learn what you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And between those two things, if you're constantly developing your career skill sets, I think naturally it picks your head up above the waves and you start to go, oh, there's a whole other world out here. So that's how I got there by, you know, my biggest, I think, kick in the pants was when I wanted to do my master's in sports nutrition. At that time in my life, I was going to be a personal trainer the rest of my life. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to do all my nutrition coaching and you're an RD. So, you know, it's also exciting to nerd out to all the stuff that I've actually probably forgotten by now, all the details of the science. But when I was exposed to that education, I was like, oh, there's this whole other world. And, you know, it's just like in anything else, like if you're in a fixed state and you don't ever expose yourself to other things, you don't know what's out there. So once I saw the potential of what was out there, that gave me a certain next endpoint to work to. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, what skills do I need? And if I want to earn this, then what needs to happen here? And it's, again, it just goes back to the process. Like, you know, when they say trust the process, they're not just messing around.
So you're not process-based at all, right? This is all just off the cuff. You just kind of
say, you know, yeah. Honestly, if I'm being perfectly honest, I wish I was better at being spontaneous. You know, I think that that's being able to kind of shoot from the hip sometimes is a really good skill. And I've seen it in action.
If that's your worst flaw, I think you're doing okay.
Oh, no, I've got plenty of others. You just let me know. We'll do a different podcast.
We'll do a whole different episode for that.
Yeah, that's a different feel.
So one thing we talk a lot about here and with a lot of our guests, they're doing multiple streams of income in order to kind of create that scalability, whether all those different streams are coming to one major head, right? Like you kind of mentioned nutrition coaching, personal training, maybe bringing some sort of physical therapist, athletic trainer, physio, whatever term you want to use there. Now all of a sudden you have a team, right? A fitness team, a performance team. Was that something you tried to get after when you started to get your head above the breakers, as you put it? Did you start to look for multiple streams of income, or did you suddenly start to see, you know, the fitness wear, fitness technologies being the next step for you and that main source of income?
Good question. So when I was in grad school, I did grad school part-time and was working as a trainer full-time. So that was really like my full life at that point, you know, like it's not a lot of space for anything else. But one thing that I have always valued is developing skill sets that are kind of commutable to other industries. So one thing I always did, and I'll be honest, like it wasn't like I was killing it like income-wise. Most of what I did was more about developing skills, was writing. So writing has been a skill that I really started off thinking I was good at, learned I wasn't good at it, got decent at it, am still trying to be better at it. I think one of the most important things that can happen to you is learning that there's always somebody out there doing it better. But it's, you know, I did a few articles. My brother was a writer at the website, and he asked me to write a few articles for their health and fitness thing, the health and fitness demographic. And it was on Thrillist, I believe. Yeah. And so I had one published and I was like, that's really cool. And I did get paid for it. You know, it was one article, but I've currently, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of investing and things like that. But I currently usually like with my job roles will only have like one stream of income. I think eventually I'd love for that to change. But the thing about having multiple skill sets, for example, let's just go back to Lifetime. By having my, you know, nutrition master's, I was able to do their nutrition coaching and be one of those. I was able to do personal training. I was able to do different types of things. So I think it's cool. I think there's a lot of people out there that actually have like side businesses. And I think that's really cool. I don't do that. Not yet. I would love to try it out. But to kind of piggyback off of that, with something like perspective, and even like with the sports nutrition company I had, when I was talking about keeping your head up, you know, this is not a source of income. It's more intangible, but it is something that opens doors for you, is like engaging with those companies, long, you know, those companies or those people. Like, was I making dollars off of them? No, but you know, the sports nutrition company that I ended up ultimately working at with Joe, that person that I connected with from there was from personal training. And I always stayed in regular contact with him because I thought it was a cool product. I liked the science and I never stopped touching base and never stopped learning about it. And when the time came for me to get a job there, I was ready to go. Right. And that person knew me. And the same thing with Perspective Fitwear. When I got introduced to the brand, you know, Stephanie, the CEO, I met almost a full year before I ended up coming on to work with her, and just kind of like hitting some ideas back and forth and just doing a few things, you know, like on the weekends with her and stuff, and just engaging with brands that I think I'm really aligned with and that are really cool. And if, you know, eventually would it be smarter? Would somebody else be like, hey, that should be multiple streams of income? Sure. But I've definitely benefited from engaging with, you know, other brands and things while you're making your income. That's kind of been my version of a side hustle, is just, you know, staying engaged and looking around at what else is out there. Obviously, well, your primary job is where your job is, right?
that's so smart. It's something people forget about often, right? They forget about creating those relationships and kind of working that way. And my wife, who's, you know, way better than I deserve, much like Joe and his wife, much like probably your husband. So we all have, these abilities to make these soft connections or these small connections. And it's just something that's led to me in my life. I've always had that ability to kind of talk to people and kind of be able to come back to that 3, 5, 10 years later, and be like, hey, man. And they remember you as that positive person. And all of a sudden that weak connection, right? You didn't spend a lot of time with them, but you planted that seed. And now all of a sudden that seed is ready to go and it's ready to be harvested. I hate to use it that way because it sounds like I'm a terrible person just using people, but that relationship is there. And it sounds like you do a fantastic job of that. So it sounds like you're actually setting yourself up for long-term success and maybe those multiple streams of income, or maybe you'll bring another brand over to the fitness wear company. And now you can suddenly start having that kind of, you know, relationship together where you guys can build those companies separately while still working towards the same goal. So I think that's super cool.
Yeah. And you know, like you said, there's a difference between being transactional and being a real person. And anybody can smell out the difference between authenticity and, you know, just kind of being a little bit fake. And like, when I'm sure all of us, when we make connections with other people, in the business world, like I think I'm earnest in it. Like, I think what, you know, this guy is doing is really cool and I'm rooting for you. And if, you know, I'll check in and see how your business is doing. And if one day it makes sense for us to work together, great, let's go. But there is, I think sometimes, you know, the networking and stuff, you kind of have this like image of like some slicked back hair and like some, you know, but networking is, you know, with like a little like martini, but which can be part of it. I know.
But, it is part of it sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes martinis are involved in it, but it's just, it is human connection. And, you know, we don't lose by rooting for each other. Especially when you've got aligned values of brands. And it's, you know, I definitely think that, again, like it's not transactional. I see what you were saying. It's just human relations, and you know, we're all in it together.
So, no, sorry, I cut you off, Matt. So Nat, again, you have so many things. I got so many different comments, you know, the soft skills. We actually had Jesse Wright on recently. We wrote a book on soft skills and how they're so important. And the thing, you know, though I want to get into something you made, salary history, revenue history, as a comment, but the soft skill thing is important to touch on. But within the soft skill, you made another comment. You obviously have to know your hard skills. So there's the lesson there of you have to know what you're supposed to know, but you also have to have the soft skills. So just something for anyone listening, you know, just because you have the soft skills doesn't mean you have the hard skills to back it up, and vice versa. So they're two in one coin. Talk about revenue. And we're going to kind of shift gears. I'm going to pull you back with the second question. Talk about the idea of a revenue history or a salary history, because some people have no idea what we're talking about, no idea what you referenced when you're saying, I started here, I wanted to get here financially, and I had to kind of build myself so that way, as I applied to these new jobs and new stuff, I was the person who could get paid the, you know, 60 to 70 to 80 to 90 to 100, to, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Okay. One of the most humbling things that has ever happened to me. Now, I'm actually not a good, I'm not like a human calculator. So I always use an actual calculator when I'm doing numbers, right? And I do numbers because I am oddly motivated by them. But if somebody else in the room is better at them, I'm like, yeah, let's look at his numbers. You know, I don't want to do this, right? But one of the most humbling things that's ever happened to me is my husband, and I think we were either engaged or dating at the time, I was talking about this. I was like, you know, I feel like I've capped out at this amount that I'm earning, and I can't create more hours in the day. And now I'm going to go to grad school. So I'm going to be paying as I go with grad school. How am I going to make more money? And he is incredible with numbers. And he calculated out how much money I actually made per hour, because he calculated how much money I was making while training, and then all the money all the hours that I was doing program design for clients, texting and following up with them, education and continued learning. And all of a sudden that number was a lot lower than what the annual income was. And that was the most humbling thing. And I say that like with all the love for my experience at personal training, but there is a ceiling because you can't create new hours in the day and you're working one-on-one with clients. And so when he kind of costs it out, like, yes, this is what you're making, but if I calculate all the hours that you're working, that's actually not that good for like what you, you know, what you want to do. So, that was like the first thing I was like, okay, so the number one thing I want to do is be able to kind of earn more working, like earn as much as you can working the most reasonable amount of hours. Now, I'm somebody who is always going to work a lot. I like to work hard. I take a lot of pride in my work. So, you know, understanding like what skills you need to create more revenue, I would say like potential for yourself. So my, again, my first step was, okay, you know, when I was a personal trainer, having X amount of certs or education automatically increased your hourly pay with the, at the company that I was at. Okay. That's something I can do. Done. That's relatively straightforward, right? If you want to stay in there, like, you know, there's levels of trainers, right? You've got, you know, some people charge this amount, some people charge that amount. And then once that was kind of capped out, you know, you start to go, okay, well, what are people, you know, so I, that was kind of one thing for me of kind of like moving away from the training industry for me was kind of going, all right, well, this is a little bit tough for me to kind of get the hours in the day, go to grad school. And then, you know, like, how am I going to end up earning this amount? And that's where you were asking about like the soft and the hard skills. Like, how do you know which one to go to next? Mm-hmm. One thing I knew I wanted to do, sorry, circuitous, but one thing I knew I wanted to do was do a lot more in like nutrition education. And there was even a time for me that I was thinking about maybe teaching some classes. And so for me, that was an obvious step. Like if I do my MS in nutrition, then I will have created a lot more opportunity for myself. I could teach, which could be online, right? It could be like extra revenue there. It's like a couple hours a week. I know you did that, Joe. Mm-hmm. I could teach. I could charge more on my hourly rate. And I could speak to sports nutrition. Like, and again, that goes back to kind of planting those seeds early in brands of being like, there's a couple brands in my head that I'm like, I wouldn't hate working for them. And I know that that revenue potential is greater because you've got, you're covering a larger area. So that was a hard skill that I did not have, right? Especially in a science like, you know, nutrition, you're going to want some level of credibility, some level of, you know, education to speak to. That was a financial commitment for me that I was like, this, I'm going to reinvest in myself. And so understanding like what that, and that was that step for me, understanding what I needed to do to be able to either charge more, because I could do better by my clients, not because I just wanted to charge more, but because I could offer more services. It wasn't about that, but it's also like you want to do good by your clients and the people who are trusting you. And then also knowing that ultimately I wanted another hard skill to be able to market myself and see what else was out there beyond the realm of training. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no. So it actually leads me to the next part. So, okay. It's actually funny we're talking about this, right? I actually had a conversation with someone who used to work for me who's currently in the collegiate athletic space, and she's looking at getting out and working in like kind of the sport company side, supporting, you know, the athletes and schools and the coaches. But she also has an opportunity to go to a different school and be the same role just laterally. And I was like, you know, hey, like if you move out of the world and you go into one of these businesses, you always have to be like 95.5 or 99.1. And what I mean by that is you can never be 100% to the business because it's a dog eat dog world. It's very competitive internally in the business. You know, if your product isn't the hot product, you're going to be struggling. You know, there's so many things when you're trying to sell into something, especially when you know people, you know, the both of us have lived that life doing that. So my advice to her, and I actually, that's why I was looking at my phone real quick. So I wanted to pull up the text message to specifically read it. So where, you know, I'm kind of saying, you know, hey, you know, you have to have a pulse on the industry. You have to always be, you know, looking, you know, listening to the ground for what's coming, but looking ahead to see what's out there. And the one thing I said is you never can just do things for company X. You have to use everything you do for them to leverage your next move and create your next position. Every visit relationship needs to benefit you. The food that goes on your table and the family you're going to have now or in the future, And she was kind of taken aback. And she's like, that's a little intense. And I was like, no. It's like, that's kind of how you have to set it up. And it brings me to my question for you, Ned, is you talk about developing skills, right? Hard skills, soft skills. But you also referenced a key thing. It was your reputation of being someone who's willing to help, being someone who's genuine, being someone who wanted to do more than just take your money and run, right? And we know people who, it was, how much can I get from you right now? And then I'm not going to talk to you again until I need to hit you for the money. It was transformational, right? You tried to develop rapport. You tried to develop confidence that they could trust you. At what point did you realize, right, you had to do some of that for free? And I'm going back to a very specific conversation me and you had on the phone about you're doing this thing over here full time. You're doing your job. You're making sure you do it well, because as you said, you take pride in your work. So you're not letting the quality of what you're committed to down, but you're also trying to develop something else. But what you had to do was do it for free. So talk about that, the challenge of, you know, you're not just going to do it and get $100,000 for it because, hey, I did it today. Like, people are going to be like, well, you don't really do that. You're not good at it. Why should I listen to you? Why, you know? So talk about some of that.
And keep bearing in mind that this is just my experience. I'm sure there's a number of ways to peel an orange, so to speak. One thing that you said to your client or to your friend over the text just reminded me of something I kind of always tell myself, is that you are the business. Like, you are the business. Invest in it. So like the education, the skills, the experience, like, you know, I would love, the company I'm at right now, I'd actually love to stay for a long time, but like at this, you know, I love what I do, but the world, especially if last year taught us anything, is extremely unpredictable. You are the business. So what are you doing to keep yourself, you know, in a financially stable position, in a position to be dexterous and, you know, nimble if like the job market becomes volatile, setting yourself up for future success. It's not about the company. Like, you bring those skills. That's the human factor to it. And that's why I am an experiential, experience is valuable, right? And so at what point do you decide to start to do things free? Is that's for me, again, like, you are the business. Like, I need this. I like this brand. I'm totally fine doing, like, giving some of my time, knowing like how much of my time I'm willing to give to, it's not just helping that brand, but that experience is helping you as well, right? Like, that is, I mean, and if it's not, then I would say maybe reconsider doing things for free. But even things like, you know, when you're spending extra time, well, going back to personal training, you're spending extra time with your clients because they're having a really hard time with their training program or their nutrition. Like, you should care about people. You should care about your clients if you're going to be in training. And I always did. It was never about just grabbing money from them or anything like that. You want to make sure that, you know, what you're doing is correct by them, and, you know, you're giving your best to them. So that's, I think for me, I always go into any working situation knowing that there's going to be kind of this like extra energy or time that I'm going to be giving, because it's going to be giving back to me, right? Like, if I'm on the side, like, you know, kind of like on my weekends and my free time, kind of like, you know, talking to another company in a different non-compete, right? I try to be very, you know, like on the up and up. I don't try to like be shady like that. But if I'm talking to this other company and I like what they're doing in my free time, if they want to talk and, you know, ask my opinion about something, we bounce things off of each other. Yes. Like, because that's a soft skill or even a hard skill that you could potentially be learning. So, you know, you kind of say at what point, I don't know at what point. I would more encourage people to know their limit, know how much free time that you have in your life. Because I encourage people to, I mean, not people, but if you're looking to kind of, especially in the startup space, a lot of what you're going to be doing is, you know, free, or even if you're doing some side hustling and helping somebody out and it might turn into something, or even if you're doing your own side hustling for yourself and it might turn into something, but not, very rarely do these things give you money right away. So I would kind of encourage folks to, one, know how much time you actually are willing to give to it and hold to it. Because you might end up getting a little salty if you, all of a sudden you're doing free things all the time. So I don't think I've ever really stopped doing things, just a few side things here and there. I just can't help it. I like it, but I think it's budgeting your time is important.
And I think you hit on a very important point with one, know your limits. And then two, it needs to be doing something. If you're just doing it to do it and it's not helping you get better or grow or develop that next thing, then it's truly a waste of time. But even if it's a back pocket. So I'm going to actually take this idea and kind of flip it to a little bit of a negative, but how you deal with it in terms of, right? And I can say this for a fact, because when we worked together, there was a specific guy who you had a great relationship with, and you called and you made something happen. You made a connection and an event, and you pulled off something that wasn't supposed to happen because you knew the guy and the guy knew you and he liked you. So he said, okay, I'll do that with you. What point do you not use your relationship, reputation, credibility for a business? So this is just to set the stage for anyone listening. If you're like Natalie or Matt or myself, and you pride yourself on doing the right thing and putting pride, you know, having pride in your work, you know people, and not that you, it's not like a favor thing, like, hey, you owe me one, but it's over time, you know, you help people and they help you and you build those relationships where you can kind of call one in if you need one. Well, if you're working, say me and Natalie know each other and I think she'd be great for a project me and Matt are doing. And I, you know, Matt's kind of sometimes, not the best, not always treats people the right way, you know, whatever. And I bring that in and things go sideways. That's a huge hit on me for my relationship with Matt. So talk to that, because I know we've lived it personally, and I've seen you manage it. So talk to how you bringing something into a business and then managing that dynamic, because it still reflects on you even after you've gone from that business.
Right. Yeah. You know, this is where the word that comes up for me is empathy. And it might sound weird because it's like, what, you know, but you really do need to think about, you know, if you're harnessing a relationship that you've fostered, and that you've grown over time, that you value, and hopefully we all value our relationships, right? That's kind of why we're here. But if the tables, the classic, now, how would you feel, right, if you were in their shoes? But seriously, do it. Ask yourself what you're asking of that person. Is it reasonable? Would you think twice if they were asking it of you? Have you kind of tapped into that person a lot? Right? Like, treat them like the very valuable, you know, relationship, and respect their time and respect the relationship that you have with them, and that you certainly are not trying to take advantage of their expertise or their pool in the industry. Like, be empathetic. If you were them, would you feel used? Or would you feel like, oh my gosh, she's calling me again? Like, right. And that's, I do think in general, empathy is a really great place to start. For a lot of things, but in business, sometimes I think it gets lost. And then again, understanding, like, when you bring in like kind of an outside relationship, and if you're bringing them into a company, just taking full ownership of it from beginning to end, right? That's your ship. And I think I stole that from, yes, I stole that from a book title. It's Your Ship, but you own that. No, there's no such thing as a new good idea. You own that process from beginning to end. And you know what? Like, if somebody else in your company is to, don't pass it off. Don't let that person like hang out to dry. Like, own that relationship from beginning to end, even if it feels a little unpopular, because you are responsible for their experience, because you're asking something from them. So take care of it. You know, nourish that relationship. Mm-hmm.
No.
So one thing you touched on there was that you brought up making the right decision and kind of following the right path, using your ship and maintaining that ship, staying on that ship. So that being said, how did you know this is the right startup company for you? What were the markers, KPIs, data? What kind of drove you to say, hey, this is the one? And if you can, I would like to hear the personal side, you think as a person, and then also the business side?
Yeah. So the minute I met Stephanie, who's the CEO of Perspective Fitwear, you know, there is, are you guys familiar with Brené Brown?
Yes, very much so. Polly, you got to get on this, man. No, her books are great. She's from, she's at the University of Texas. Hootie knew her from when Hootie spent some time there, as you can imagine, the networking social butterfly.
Well, I don't know, obviously, I don't know Brené Brown personally. I wish I did, but I'm a big fan of her research, and her work is incredible. And she has this really cool, I think it's in The Gifts of Imperfection, where she talks about your gut, or your kind of gut feeling versus your brain, and how the gut isn't necessarily illogical or irrational. And you need to kind of take a moment to balance gut instinct versus logical and decide which one is right. It's very cool how she walks through it, way more eloquent than what I just said. And it was a gut feeling from the get-go, which is for somebody like me, unusual, because again, I am pretty like process driven. So, but I liked Stephanie immediately. And one of the first things that the personal story, you know, we're talking and I'm like, so what's the deal? Cause one thing that brought me over there, I'm in San Diego. I was kind of looking at her signage and I'm like, oh, an eco-friendly fabric. That's kind of cool. You know, like we're kind of in a place where we really need to do eco-friendly stuff. And she just kind of launches into her brand story. And, you know, we're both like the exact same age, both active people, active women. And she was like, you know, unlike me, she's very into endurance. I don't like to do any exercise over 2.5 hours, but she was doing, you know, like long distance, you know, like half Ironmans. She did an Ironman. And she was like, one thing is that like, I had to choose between that high quality athletic apparel, because you can't do an Ironman in a cotton poly blend, like good luck. Or you could choose something. And usually this is like silhouetted for men, right? And I've had that experience. I've done Olympic distance triathlons and been in like some really, really interesting silhouettes. And so wasn't my favorite. Or you can choose something aesthetically pleasing, but it's not technical. So, and the other issue right now, especially kind of in the endurance space, is like a size inclusivity issue. And for me as somebody, especially at that point, really, I've been really inspired kind of by just the self-love movement towards loving yourself in every process of life. Even if you're not physically where you want to be, you have to like still maintain your self-worth and feel like you're worthy of, you know, life. And, you know, it's still okay to work on fitness goals and still feel worthy at the same time. Right. And that kind of spoke to where I was, which is like these core values of, trying to be more sustainable and more intentional and like how we operate in this economy, right? Are we perfect? No, but are we trying? Yes. And I think the sustainability was cool. And then just the story of just being woman owned, woman founded, and, you know, like creating pieces for women that hopefully will lower the barrier to entry into starting something new. It is true that like, if you are like, hey, I want to do a marathon or a triathlon, what do I wear is kind of like the next question. And like, imagine not seeing your size or an experience a lot of women have, and probably men too, but I can really only speak to the female experience, is like when I would shop endurance brands, sometimes they'd be like two sizes bigger than the size that I'm used to. And like, that's something that kind of is relatively common in the industry. And so just all of a sudden, I'm just seeing this brand, and it's like all the core values are everything that I've ever cared about in sports, right? Empowering women through movement, encouraging women to be strong and to take up space. And to one of the things that really makes me sad sometimes is thinking about, you know, there are women out there that haven't been able to express themselves through movement because they felt intimidated or like they couldn't do it. Like, you know, this is like, you know, I all of us, you know, have a mom, right? You know, I remember my mom was telling me that she couldn't play on a soccer team until she was a certain age. Like, she was the first girls' soccer team in her town. And, you know, she's like, you know, she's not even 60 yet. So like, things have changed a lot for women, which is great. But like, you know, we just having this brand where it's all about getting you to move, whether you're a pro, like, yes, we can outfit you. But if you are crossing the start line for the first time, we've got something for you. And like, we've got you. And that was, I was hooked. And then the other side to it, the business side, is I was blown away and continue to be by Stephanie. Her background is in finance. I told you I can do numbers. They're not my favorite. She was a buyer for Macy's, an incredible, just an incredible achiever in her side of the business. So two things right away. I'm like, love that this CEO is, you know, numbers. Like she is a human calculator. Like she does numbers in her head really fast, calculating margins. It's amazing to watch. And two, this is like a beat of, this is like a side of the business that I really want to learn that I don't really know too much about. And so those two things, it was really kind of like, it felt like that moment, like where like, you know, like the Power Rangers are ready to transform, you know, depends on how old you are. You may or may not know how that felt, but it was a really formative feeling. But I was like, this is it. Like the emotion is there. Like the passion is there. We want the same things. And she's got a really cool skill set that I really look for in leadership. And I was ready to go.
That's awesome. So let's bring it back. Scalability. What's one of the words you brought up right away in the very beginning? When you looked at her, you looked at Stephanie, you looked at the product, you looked at the entire situation and kind of landscape of, you know, women's fitness gear, if you will, and kind of what was lacking. How did you know it was scalable and what were you looking to get to? Like now that we've kind of, my favorite analogy for, I don't know how much I'm supposed to make. My dad only made X amount. My mom only made X amount. My grandfather, whatever your situation is, there's that thermometer and there's that temperature gauge of 100K is too much money. I don't deserve that. Or, hey, 200K is too much money. I don't deserve that. And I love when people start to turn that up and they start to crank it up. So going back to that, and I'm sorry, I kind of threw three different things.
No, you're fine.
But looking at that company, what's kind of your scalability look? And now looking at yourself, you know, multiple years removed from the personal training standpoint, have you been able to turn up that thermometer, that temperature to where you want to be from an earning standpoint?
Yeah. So the scalability was evident right away. And I think that one of the most important things going back to processes is like, especially, you know, retail is like a new space for me, right? I have never been in retail, but one, just being a consumer, I was like, oh, this feels it's also very fashion forward. I forgot to mention that. It's also really, really aesthetically like beautiful. And so you kind of got this like triple threat of sizing, sustainability, and silhouetting, which is, you know, okay, it's like a marketing term I like to use. And then it's also like highly technical, like the apparel is highly technical. So that was something as a consumer I'd seen a gap in, but something that can kind of help that, I like to go to is just doing a general kind of competitor spread. Like, you know, it's very, I love Excel. I think anybody who's ever like worked in training loves Excel, but just going through like what the market has to offer, you know, what brands are out there, like what are they doing? And then across the board, like, do they offer this, SPF 50+, FIR technology, sweat wicking, fast drying, aesthetics, size inclusivity, all this stuff. And that's also how I think, you know, you can kind of gauge, is there a gap? Is there a need? And I, you know, saw that as a customer and then just kind of seeing that kind of comparison. That's helpful too, is like understand your landscape, which is always changing. I think you got to check that all the time. The other thing I just saw, just actually having been in the sports nutrition company, and Stephanie, I mean, she only started selling in 2018. And at the time I met her, it was like late 2019 is when I first met her and first started talking to her. She was already doing an incredible job, but in terms of scale, she was like a one woman show, which again, I can't say enough how much admiration I have for her. Like she's very inspirational to me. I knew from the sports nutrition, how many specialty wholesale accounts are out there in the world, you know, and she was already starting to get into them. Right. But she's only one person. So I was like, oh, well, eventually when there's another body, we can go to specialty retail. And, you know, you want to go to those places because those are the folks that are in there engaging in that sport every single day. And they can speak to it. They understand like it's going to be a lot easier to kind of help that, like help them understand what's different, because they've been doing it for a long time. They're the experts. The other thing that is really exciting that I can share, that I'm stoked to be able to share on this, is that, you know, she started, you know, this was kind of something she wanted to do for a long time. But, you know, part of our scalability is also just working with bigger organizations. And we actually, probably by the time this comes out, you know, the press release will be out, but I can say it, is that we just signed a contract with USA Triathlon. We're an official sponsor of USA Triathlon, and we're the official training apparel of USA Triathlon.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
And that's kind of like, when you think about, scalability and stuff, it's cool because it's like everybody needs gear and apparel, right? But it's also just about, like, you know, starting those conversations early and just being tenacious. And obviously nothing was going to happen in 2020. So, you know, just being able to kind of touch base with them and keep going with them. Plus, the other benefit from a business standpoint is that we do all of our manufacturing in North America. So we have a manufacturing facility here in California, and we do some cut and sew in Mexico. So, like, the cool thing about that is that it's here, and it doesn't have to be shipped from, like, across the world. And I think the benefit to that is just that it's a little more, like, readily available. And I think people do like when things kind of stay in North America, you know, trying to support local and stuff like that. So there was a lot of cool things about the company that I felt like could absolutely just be amplified. And we've also increased our wholesale accounts starting in 2021 as well. Yeah, just being able to just, there's a lot of opportunity out there. And the other side of it is that endurance sports are only growing in popularity, right? That's the other thing, is like, look at where the customer is going. And and women in endurance sports is only growing. So all those kind of factors there, it's like, yes, absolutely. Now, that being said, there's always a leap of faith moment, right? Like, I can sit here and I'm only one person with one set of eyes and one brain. And it's like, I see all of this, and I still, just being cognizant of the fact that, like, it's still a big leap of faith. Like, you know, like, but I do think it's good to know that the potential is there, that the market is there, and that, like, there's a place to go up. And then to answer your question, like, yeah, I mean, as I've kind of moved about in my career, I've definitely been able to turn the dial up, you know, on my, like, earning potential and things like that. And also I've gotten smarter, about money. And I think that that's, you know, it's always fun to earn more money, right? Like, that's kind of, I think it's really ingrained. And don't get me wrong, it's great to earn more money than you did last year and the year before. Cool. I forget who said this to me one time, but it's always stuck with me, is that you are as broke as the money you make. And I actually think it was one of my first location when I was in Northern Virginia as a personal trainer. I'm almost positive it was one of my coworkers, and he was an uber saver, like amazing saver. And that stuck with me because it's like, you know, that's true. Like, think about how much you made at your first job out of college, right? And then where you are now, like, how your spending habits have changed, your saving habits, and, like, whoo, like, it is about bringing up the money. But, oh my God, like, I've just really been more impressed with, like, the money habits versus the income.
Absolutely. One of my dad's favorite sayings, similar to your coworker, was always, no matter how much more money you make, you will spend more money to go along with it. And I never believed him until I got to this point where, you know, by no means am I big balling or anything, but I'm finally comfortable. Like, I don't have to worry. I know money's not, you know what I mean? And it's just, it's so true. It's funny. It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
Yep. No. Hey, I think I've said this with you, Matt. Zach Penwell said this to me one night at dinner. Zach Penwell, Natalie, was a person we did our master's degree with at UConn, you know, whatnot. He was older, from the military, had a wife and kids while he was in school, you know, went to the military, came back to do his degree, the whole bit. And whereas me and my Rach, we were just boyfriend and girlfriend at the time, went to his house with him and his wife, we were eating and talking. And he's like, yeah, he's like, well, if you guys get married and have kids, he's like, they cost as much as you have. So that's no matter what you have, that's what you have. Like, you know, I was like, It's like, that's been like the one thing that's stuck in my head forever with kids now is, yeah, they do cost as much as you have. So let me switch gears on you, right? So you made a couple comments, and you know, you even show up today as Stephanie. I'm not even going to try and pronounce her last name. Do you do it?
So Perez, actually, but Ertzberger was her maiden name. But yeah, she's
gotcha. So yeah, I'm assuming you're logged in on the Zoom from the company because
Apologize. Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Hey, it's good. People are watching. You want to know what perspective is? Search her name. She's going to come up. She's the CEO.
Perfect.
So we're talking about, you know, keeping your head up, seeing what's out there. You know, I always look at it like, are you in the 0 to 3 month window? Are you in the 8 to 16 month window? Are you in the 36 month window? Some people are good at each one. Some people can do a little bit of all. How does that play for you with leadership, right? And you talk about Stephanie as a leader, as a CEO, and you said very, very flattering things about her. Talk about, you know, you said it's your ship, right? You're talking about yourself. How do you know when to put your ship in someone else's armada? And then how do you know when to set sail in a different direction? So give me, you know, from the business standpoint, what are you evaluating in leaders? What are you evaluating in the people you work for? What are the goods and bads and kind of how you know when to stay and when to leave throughout your experiences?
Yeah. Well, the thing I always look for in leadership is the ability to learn, right? And that goes back to we're talking about like skill sets, like soft skills, hard skills, but like I've certainly picked up a lot of hard skills working at a startup, right? I mean, I can build landing pages now. That's like a new thing for me, right? and I do a lot more writing now, so that's obviously improved. I always look for the ability to learn from leadership. And I would say also just creating like a culture of encouraging trying new things and being willing to being willing to entertain like new ideas. And again, that's definitely where I'm at right now is that like, you know, we're at a point where trying new things and spreading our wings is a really good thing. I also like from leadership, I didn't really think about this until you asked me it, but I do look for emotional intelligence. You know, the way that I think we work in America, it's only ever where I've worked. We spend a lot of time at work. We spend a lot of time with colleagues. And it is goofy to me to think that as a leader, you can be leading people where they're spending a lot of their life and giving up time with family and loved ones to be there. You can't be a leader without having some emotional intelligence, right? It's a big responsibility and caring about what your colleagues are going through and caring about what your employees are going through and kind of having, I would say, like the kind of having the ability to kind of sense when somebody needs support, when somebody, you know, just being a little tuned in. I think leaders in general tend to be good performers, right? And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a bad thing. Like in businesses, like a lot of times a top performer will be promoted, not every business, but you see that happen. While that can be great, cause they can teach you how to produce. Not everything you bring to the table as an employee is production based, right? You're also bringing like your attitude, which affects a team. You're bringing your attitude's a big one. You're bringing your personality, you know, you're bringing yourself to this team. And so as a leader, I think being able to navigate and be empathetic and sensitive to like dynamics of different people and how people like to be communicated with, that type of leadership I look for, because I do think that's the future of leadership, right? You know, the old school, like authoritarian, just do what I say because I've got to do it. Like we know that that's a really resonate with people. And I think that when you do, you know, kind of have that kind of more empathetic, emotionally intelligent approach, your team won't let you fail because they feel protected and they feel understood and they feel like they feel like you get them. So they're not going to let you fail. And if they do, that's like, okay, well, I, you know, kind of put a lot of time and effort into you and now you're going to let me, you know, whatever. So that's, I don't know. I look for that as well as learning and some emotional intelligence and definitely more like a growth mindset from leadership.
Nice. So again, me and you have talked about this numerous times in the last couple of years on the phone and what I just thought it was interesting for you to put that out there because I've always agreed with you and really taken the idea of the emotional intelligence piece and then the ownership piece. And we've, you know, throughout all of our experience, Matt, I know you know the same. We've all worked for good people. We've worked for bad people. We've worked for people in the middle. We've worked for people who should have been the person, but they had someone else over them, or, you know, they were the person and they had to deal with someone else and got sucked away. So all the different levels. But again, putting that stuff out there, it's something we haven't hit on the podcast with anyone yet. And again, knowing you the way I do, I know you had a great answer for that. So I really wanted to make sure we suck that out of you. So at this point, Nat, we're just over an hour in, right? We don't try and take up everybody's time too much. And we appreciate you. Obviously, you're West Coast. It's only 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
So we always close with the big three. And the point of this is to take everyone's different conversation and at least hone it in with the same exact three questions. So that way, no matter what, there's kind of that barometer to every conversation. So I'm going to tee up the first one. Matt will get the second one. I'll get the third one. We'll close it out. So first one, and you mentioned you have a person in this role now, but who does Natalie get coached by? Who do you sharpen your sword from?
Oh yeah. So the person that I definitely lean on now, her name is Candace. She's somebody I actually met through Perspective went through this accelerator called the San Diego Sports Innovators in spring 2020, which like could not have come at a better time because who would have known? It started in February and then it's like, whoa. And the accelerator is incredible because it's actually not an incubator, more kind of preps you to get funding. The accelerator was a really cool learning process because it was kind of like just an intense, like, and I wasn't really involved in it because I wasn't working for Perspective at the time, but it kind of like helps you form your identity as a brand, your direction. Like it's kind of like the Avengers of like a business. Like you got a CFO guy and a lawyer guy and like all these people. And one was Candace, and she's this really very intelligent, just very impressive, person, a woman who works in marketing and has been her whole career. And for somebody like me, the reason that, I lean on her is that marketing in general, even though I did it at Sports Nutrition, so technically I've been in it for like 4 years, it's still not my original platform, right? It's still not like I wasn't academically trained in it. I came into it in my career. And so there are some things that I know. And then I think sometimes there's like basics that I just don't. And it is a little bit, I think scary to admit that, but I think it's important to kind of say, because you have to be aware of your own shortcomings. So Candace is somebody who's been doing this she did this on a huge scale. She now kind of works with she's a consultant. She works with a couple of different organizations. And then she's a mentor for the San Diego Sports Innovators. And so I met her through that. And then, we've created, a friendship. I think she's amazing. I learned from her a lot. I ask her questions and of course we have a great friendship, and it's important because the nice thing about her is that I can be very, very honest and be like, this is what I'm thinking. What do you think? And she'll kind of give me, her back and forth. So that's somebody I lean on right now.
Nice.
Great answer. So my question, and this is the weirdest one and also my favorite one. What was the best investment you ever made, personal or professional, for $500 to $1,000?
Oh, good question.
I to let people sit there for a second and think about it, but it doesn't usually go well.
It's got to be my graduate degree. I mean, it's, you said, I'm sorry, $500 to $1,000?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, graduate degree ever.
That's all I was thinking. I was like, this girl got a discount, right?
Yeah. I got the friends and family. I did not. $500 to $1,000.
Yes, ma'am.
You're going to have to like cut some of this waiting time.
No, that's fine. We actually play the Jeopardy music while people were thinking, so no pressure. So little help. It can be anything. So previous guests, people have said an iPhone because they were able to do more business on it. They were able to grow their business. Other people have said a vacation to go to a certain place with a significant other. Other people have talked about technology piece that has just saved them a ton of time. Anything you want, anything that you can think to yourself, man, if I didn't have X or Y, my day to day or my weekly would suck. Something along those lines.
Okay. I can't do like, it has to be a one-time purchase, right? It can't be like a cumulative purchase.
No, you know what? Cumulative is fine. So I'm curious now. I'm curious.
I'm kind of doing the math in my head, and please nobody do the math because you're going to be like, it's not exactly 500. But the technologies that I invest in to do my job better, and I'll name them out right now, Canva. I mean, are you guys familiar with Canva? Holy cow. And that backstory is really cool too. That's, it's just because I do like our email marketing and things like that, but there's like so many one-offs that I can jump on. Like, for example, there'll be like a local ad like that is like, you know what? We have nobody to fill this digital space. Can you throw something together? Me personally, without Canva, the answer is no. With Canva, all things, I absolutely was able to accomplish it. Canva. And I want to say it's $150 a year. And then I'm adding to this. So I have the Adobe everything. The Adobe everything.
The Creative Cloud. Adobe Creative Cloud.
Thank you. Yes. Obviously, I'm not using it a ton, but there's like so many conversions. Like, so you've got like people from all over the place are sending you PDFs or the wrong versions or things like that. And just honestly, it's such a headache to be like, okay, can I convert this to this? Or can I convert this image to that? Having that to convert really easily. I have also purchased, it's a way to keep track of like my expenses, which is really good, which is really important. And then I do have LinkedIn Pro, and I love LinkedIn. It's probably my favorite social media. So that kind of says something about me. So, but these are all yearly expenses. So these are all yearly expenses. And then I want to change my answer.
All right, go change your answer.
Okay. My answer is actually currently I'm working with this amazing, she's kind of like working with me on my nutrition right now, which sounds crazy, but Matt, you can probably empathize that like sometimes you know too much, and I can talk myself out of a good nutrition habit any day of the week. I can talk myself in circles. And she, for like 3 months, I think it was like just under $1,000. And like after 2020 and after everything that my nutrition, you know, ironically did suffer the more I got into sports nutrition because I was traveling. Like I'm dealing with about 5 years of a cumulative decline in my behaviors. And she's been incredible. And that is my answer. It's been so great. And she's so compassionate and positive, and I love it. Yep.
Well, only thing I'll say before we finish this question is that there's never been a moment in my life where I've known too much. I just want to make sure everybody knows that. Never been a moment.
I just, that's actually a really good point.
So, I'm just kidding.
It's kind of like sometimes if you know something, you can make your own worst client, I guess.
Oh, I can see you knowing way too much. I just never knowing too much.
No. For reference, Matt's coming at this from a football player mentality. He played football. You know, there's other things afoot here.
Yeah, well, I've been, that's the best investment, and I would pay it again a million times over.
Nice. All right, last question. How do you find balance, and then what do you define as balance?
I'm not good at it. I'll be the first to admit it. I'm seeking balance. This goes back to Atomic Habits. The best advice, as somebody who is working to create more balance in life, I have a history of prioritizing work, which really is not effective anyway. We know this, like, you know, you're just going to kind of burn your brain out, and you need to exercise your brain in other ways to remain refreshed and creative, right? Music, doodling, exercise. But going back to like Atomic Habits, like, I, you know, exercise is so important. And it's going to change throughout phases of life. It certainly did for mine. That's a big part of balance for me is like, am I hitting my amount of movement in a week? Like making sure that that is like, I create balance by creating it in my calendar. Like it has to be there. So like, I have to move, right? And I think people in general are feel better when they do. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to look like my workouts from 12 years ago where I could do 10 pull-ups, but it's there. And that's part of the balance because that's really good for my whole well-being. The other thing that I have started to implement is off times for emails. And again, being in a startup, that can be a little scary because you never want to miss that email. But one thing that's been helpful is like just making sure that there are certain times of day, particularly at night, that I'm done with my emails. And I'm not checking them till the next morning because like, I'm not like an ER doctor, you know, like it's going to be okay, you know? And if you are an ER doctor, all the respect to you. And I try to make sure there's a few other things, making sure, and my husband and I have talked a lot about this is just making sure that we are not bringing a lot of work home and talking about it all the time and kind of creating space to have conversations about other things. Like we both like sci-fi. We both, you know, making sure that in the time that we do have to share that we're doing something that we both really enjoy. And then this might sound simple, but having a dog helps with balance too, right? He has to walk. This psychologist that we work with, Lauren Serpico, Dr. Lauren Serpico at Perspective, she is this great kind of spiel about how dogs are masters of mindfulness because they're always present. And so, you know, like the wisdom of the dog. So, you know, I would say that how I strive to create balance, and I sure, certainly haven't done it, is having these non-negotiable pillars in my day. You know, it's exercise, it's the dog, it's the making sure that the emails are done at a certain time. And then making sure that like, you know, my husband and I just check in with each other and be like, okay, we're going to like finish the work talk for tonight. And I'm still working on it. I'm reading this book called The Untethered Soul right now. And that's a pretty cool, book about mindfulness. It has nothing to do with business. So just things like that, keeping your brain in spaces that are unusual and help foster that creativity, I think is really important too. So the most unbalanced I've ever been was when I was in grad school, right? Cause you're just nutrition. And then you go to training and like, you got one really good area that you're super, super great in, but that's not for me, not very sustainable.
Joe, you had tons of balance in grad school, right? Wake up at 6, get your first team, go all the way till 9 p.m. class ends over in, you know, whatever the arena, Gamble. Yeah. Yeah. So I was balanced.
So I get made fun of now when I do like 50, 60 hours a week. And I look at people, I'm like, that's like 40 to 50 less than I used to. Yeah. So yeah, I actually had to have a conversation with someone. And again, go to the phone. This is probably the greatest email I've ever gotten from somebody who was the project manager of a massive project that I'm dealing with right now. And we had an early meeting and they're in a different time zone. So it would be even earlier for that person. And they sent in the professional setting an email that said, and I quote, I don't think I'll be of much value because I'm not a morning person. If it's absolutely necessary for me to be there, let me know. It's like, oh,
we have choices now. That's cool. Like, didn't know that was the thing.
Like, very self-aware. That's not my thing.
That was such a great way to put that. Self-aware. I have other words I would have used, but yeah. Self-aware is good.
He knows what it's about.
Yeah. So needless to say, having, putting work first and then also being asymmetric at times, like you said, grad school, right? You had to put the time in to learn the hard skills to do things. There's something to be said for that, but in the big picture, the undulation can't be so far in one direction that you try and make up for it in the other direction. It's such an extreme, because then people look at you and they're like, what?
And I just one quick thing to add to that, that I forgot. And one thing I've finally started to actually learn is like, know when to recognize when to rest, because just like the undulations in every business, I don't know, every job I've ever had, I don't know about you guys, has had a general really busy time of year and a generally like lower time of year. Mm-hmm. As somebody who is type A and kind of has, I'm trying to work on the hustler mentality too. Like, it's good to have, but it can be, it's also still very ego driven, right? But it's like, when things are low, ride the wave you're on, because you're going to need that energy because the high tide's coming in again. Mm-hmm. And that is something, I don't know about you guys, but I've certainly been like, you know, just going all the way back to personal training. I think it was August. I can't forget the month. I'm like, oh, August is terrible. And I've got to hit these, you know, numbers. But it's just like the folks that had it figured out, the trainers that had it figured out, just like took all their PTO. And they were like, listen, my clients are out. I'm out. I'm going to chill because we're about to get into back to school, into holiday season, and just know when to take the rest. Trust me, that the hustle will come back. It's coming for you.
Yeah, I always call it the coming from the coaching, the active recovery period. I used to tell my athletes, the people who work for me, like, I want you to take those periods because I want you to get itchy again. I want you to want it. Whereas if all you're doing is it, and you're just like, okay, I'm done with this and falling asleep, then you're useless to me. So no. Nat, I think that was a great point to close it on. Let's give a second to, where can people find you? How do people find the company? You know, give us all that stuff, the social media, the whole bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, the only social media that I really love, like as a professional, is LinkedIn. You can, you know, certainly connect with me on LinkedIn. I love talking to people, networking. And the other place is obviously Perspective Fitwear. You know, I'd love to, you know, we're just, our social media is Perspective Fitwear, perspectivefitwear.com. But yeah, this has been really cool. I really think what you guys are doing is really neat. It's good, important conversations to have.
Cool. All right. Well, Nat, thank you. Matt, anything?
No, I think she absolutely crushed it. I was super pumped about this episode and she did not disappoint.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, I had a great time, you guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, everybody. Until next time.